Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to The Checkout. It's a podcast. You know that already. Get it on our website, our homepage, checkoutjazz.org, or subscribe to it, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Music. It's a show produced at WBGO 88.3 FM in Newark, and I'm your host, Simon Rentner. As some of you may know, years ago, The Checkout campaigned for Bobby McFerrin to become finally recognized as an NEA Jazz Master. And we're happy to say that milestone happened. And his daughter, the vocalist Madison McFerrin, is here to talk about it. She sat down with me right before the coronavirus outbreak to share some ridiculous, absolutely hilarious tales from her childhood. And, you know, she'll also reflect on her father's resounding career that has informed Madison's artistry. And what was crazy about putting together this show, you start to realize Bobby McFerrin's sound cannot be quantified, can't be put into any box or style or genre. It just takes you in every direction, from classical music to Middle Eastern sounds, to jazz improvisation, to choral music, to funk, to R&B, to children's songs. It just goes everywhere, sometimes all at once. And we're going to get into this actually really personal show for me, since Bobby has been a hero of mine for a very long time. And then later in the show, we're going to dive into Madison McFerrin's latest EP, You and I, a collaboration with her brother, the electronic producer, Taylor McFerrin. It's a super vibey collection of songs that you'll definitely want to hear, and we'll actually begin this program with one of them, a composition called Try. Stick around, Madison McFerrin will join us in a little bit. Thanks for checking in. Try. here in an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York City. We are celebrating NEA Jazz Master Class of 2020, the legendary Bobby McFerrin, vocalist, innovator, just lives and breathes music from every cell of his body, I think. And here to speak about him and his craft, and also to celebrate her new recording, a joint venture with her brother. That was I saw that coming about 5 years ago. A beautiful sounding recording, You and I. Madison McFerrin, thank you for joining us.
Hello, hello.
All right, so we're going to get into You and I a little bit later in the show, but I first wanted to dedicate this first portion of the interview to talk about a huge passion of mine. Honestly, one of my earliest heroes in music growing up in high school and geeking out. In fact, right around the time you were born, I think your father released the duet with Chick Corea.
Oh, nice.
And that, you know, which was recorded in 1992. You were born in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
But that record still, I think, is what, if I had to rank them, I think I would put that number one.
Oh, wow. It's a good one. It's definitely a good one.
It's kind of like, I mean, how often do you get like a live performance where almost every note is perfect?
Mm-hmm. Doesn't happen very often.
But I miss you most of all, my darling. When autumn leaves start to
I'm going to tell you the stupid story I had with my best friend growing up in high school. Did I tell you that story?
I don't think so.
So when your father came through at the Holt Center, my friend and I in high school were obsessed with that Chick Corea recording. At the beginning of Autumn Leaves, he starts riffing on
like the jazz, like lounge vibe.
Exactly. And then, you know, starts making up some ridiculous scats. My friend and I actually transcribed one of those scats. Thinking he would know what we're talking about. I think it was like from boogie. And we like literally wrote that out on a piece of paper and stood up in the middle of this huge concert and held it up in front of your father. Your father like read it like 5 times and then was confused. And then just moved on to the concert, and we proceeded to humiliate ourselves.
Perfect. Yeah. He doesn't remember a lot of the stuff that he does, you know, especially when he's just riffing and making up stuff, because he does so much ridiculous things. So there are a few ridiculous things that have stood out and he holds on to them, but otherwise it's just like a flash in the pan.
All right, so let's get straight to the ridiculousness.
Yeah.
Because he seems like a child living in a grown adult's body.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. That's a valid and correct interpretation.
Take us back to your then childhood. And are there specific stories that you remember where he's just being a child with you in play?
I mean, if you look at the majority of the pictures of the two of us, like from my childhood, they're like 90% funny faces. Like I to this day have a difficult time holding a straight face in photos. It's like you can get a couple photos of me with a straight face, but otherwise I'm probably just gonna start getting silly because that is directly derived from him. He was always doing this thing where he'd be like, can you say, and then just say like that kind of thing, like just like total nonsense gibberish, like not even anything real at all. But one of my favorite things was I had my dad read me bedtime stories until I was about 12, because he was always making them so lively and was always giving all of the characters different voices. And it was this really incredible experience that I wanted to hold on to as long as possible. It's one thing that I look forward to for when I eventually have children, is like having him read them bedtime stories, because it was such a special thing for me. Like, I wouldn't even let my mom read me bedtime stories. I was like, you're not doing the voices right. Like, you don't know how this actually goes. There is We're Going on a Bear Hunt. He read that to my kindergarten class one time. And the book has this refrain where it's like, we're going on a bear hunt, we're going to catch a big one. What a beautiful day. We're not scared. Uh-oh. And then it's like the thing that you are approaching. And like by the end of him reading it to my class, my teacher had to like quiet us down, because we were all like, we're going on a bear hunt, we're gonna catch a big one. That was like constant rotation, where like to this day, where it's like, if you say like, what a beautiful day, like he will say, we're not scared. There was a book called Earl's Too Cool for Me, which I don't know how it started, but at one point he read the book forwards, and then when he got to the end, he read the whole book backwards. And so that became a thing where anytime we read Earl's Too Cool for Me, we read it all the way forward, and then he'd read it all the way back. So it ends with me for cool, two Earls is the backwards one. Soup from a Stone was a big one, and he'd always do this voice where he's like, soup from a stone, fancy that. That's like the refrain. That there's that one where it's like, there was an old lady who swallowed a fly, but there's a tune to it where it's like, there was an old lady who swallowed a fly, I don't know why she swallowed a fly, perhaps she'll die. And he would always go at the end of always doing that every single time. I could go on and on and on, but it's like there are several stories. I'm telling you, it's like I would not let this guy stop reading me bedtime stories, because it was the best.
And then you would be like so hyped. Like, how would you possibly go to sleep? Because you'd be like dying.
Yeah, I think that was a complaint of my mom's, actually, was my dad was good at getting my brothers and I really riled up right before going to bed. And she'd be like, this is not what we're trying to do. We're trying to get them to go to sleep. You are not helping in this endeavor. When we do shows together, like when, because I sang in his Spirit You All band, it's a thing where like sometimes I've been told by his sound man, Danny Vicari, there have been times where he's told me after a show, he's like, you and your dad need to chill. He's like, if he gets into these fits, like you need to not look at him, because like you guys look at each other and it starts a whole thing, and like the show can like get derailed. We were in Granada, Spain, and we were on stage, and it was an outdoor concert. We're looking out at like this audience, and it was a pretty reserved audience too. And at one point he's like, oh, look at the moon. But it was a light, it wasn't the moon. And so I was just like, that's a light. And he just like fell out, and it was literal tears. And I think it was a good like probably 2-3 minutes of just, he could not contain himself, which made me not be able to contain myself. And like, that's the story I'm thinking of when Danny afterwards was like, you guys can't do that. Like, you can't just like have these fallout moments. Cause he was like, he was so emphatic about it. He was like, look at the moon. And it was just not the moon. It was just like one of the stage lights. But he didn't know. He didn't know.
Thank you. was kind of really super trippy about like listening to your father's recordings today. It's almost like a foreshadowing of what you're doing now.
It's like we're related.
Yeah. One of my favorite all-time compositions by him, Train, Medicine Man.
Mm-hmm.
Deep into that record, just the layering.
It's a great album.
Oh, such an incredible album. The layering, I hear you so much in that music. It's crazy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I listen to Yes You on repeat a lot. That's like Yes You and Sweet in the Morning probably get listened to at least once every month, if not more. And it's usually like when I listen to it once, I'm listening to it a couple times. I mean, I get so much inspiration, particularly now doing what I'm doing, just listening to the nuances of all the vocal arrangements that he has done. Because I had intended to do acapella stuff myself, but I've always been in love with vocal harmony. And so now to be on the side of like being a professional musician, being a professional vocalist, to be able to go back and listen to those records with an even greater appreciation of what he was able to do, it's incredibly inspiring to listen to. It's funny that you brought up Autumn Leaves, that recording earlier, because I actually in college one time in my ear training class. Before class, my teacher came up to me and she was like, "Hey, I just wanted to ask if this is okay. I always play this song, Autumn Leaves, as like an example for this particular class, but like you're in my class, like is it okay if, like are you okay if I play this?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's totally fine." And I hadn't listened to that song in a really long time, and I forgot that he did that whole jazz lounge vocalist thing, like, "And I mean that, babe," like that whole thing.
And you know what I think it is, chick? I think it's because it's about nature, you know? So.
That's a voice that he does all the time in the
right.
house.
I was like, going to ask you
like,
that.
Like, that is like part of my childhood is like, is him saying that stuff. So it's, you guys get a big glimpse as to who he is. He's pretty much the same person that you see on stage, off stage, just like a lot more quiet.
Thank you.
That character that he plays. Well, I don't know about you, chick, but
that's
I think
his
people
Sammy
like...
Davis, I think, is who he's basing it off of.
That's his Sammy Davis.
I'm pretty sure.
But he also, like you said, has these kind of like likes to do these proper characters,
mm-hmm.
in quotation marks.
Yeah.
You know, these very like they give vibes of class and
mm-hmm.
maybe,
he definitely gets that
maybe
from his
snootiness
parents.
Or...
That's his parents right there, for sure. 100%. My grandmother, she just passed in December, but she was like the definition of a lady, would like correct you on your grammar, like was, she did not play. Like she is not a woman that I look back on and think of her as like playful and fun. She was just like very like to the point. And like diction was her whole thing. I know that my grandfather was one of those people who like pronounces WH like, you know, like the proper way. So it's like, I'm sure that is like him making fun of his parents in many ways, I'm sure. I don't know if he would necessarily say that, but I would be willing to bet money on that.
And that's why his diction is so like
impeccable.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. His father was an opera singer. You know, it's like you can't live in that kind of household and have bad diction.
And not only just an opera singer, but the first African-American man to sing for the Met.
Mm-hmm. First African-American to sign a contract with the Metropolitan Opera. First African-American man to sing at the Met. He was supposed to be the first African-American to sing at the Met, period. But they gave that honor to Marian Anderson like 3 weeks before he was supposed to perform. They were like, let's give her this honor since she's been around for a minute. But he was supposed to be the first, but he was the first to sign a contract.
Did your father ever anticipate becoming then what he then became to be, a pop star to a certain degree?
Like, I don't know if he was necessarily expecting that per se, but he says that when he was 12, he had this feeling one day where he was like, I'm going to be successful. And then that was that. He just like had this feeling where like he knew. And I don't think he necessarily knew how. I'm sure he thought it was going to be music, but it just kind of happened.
I imagine because he is so prolific, musically speaking, I'm sure he loathes Don't Worry, Be Happy to a certain degree. Or he went through a certain period of loathing that
song.
Yeah,
absolutely.
My favorite, I think, song on that album is Drive.
Great. Such a great song.
So far, no one's gonna find me. Put my foot on the gas, accelerate, drive so fast, no one's gonna catch me.
So what would you consider to be your father's classical sort of period? Where does that begin and where does that end in your mind?
Classical?
Yeah.
I would say the time we were in Minneapolis, that was like pretty much the heavy, that's like 94 to 2001. That's like very much what he was doing. I mean, granted, he started a little bit beforehand. I believe the first time he conducted an orchestra was on his 40th birthday, if I'm not mistaken. And so that would have been 90. So that's when he was really starting. And that's, you know, when he was getting trained by Leonard Bernstein. So that was a thing that became really important to him. And I think that's also part of what, you know, it went back to him wanting to score films. I think that was a big part of that. And just exploring another side of his artistry, even if it wasn't stuff that he was putting out, because, you know, that's in the 90s, that's when he's putting out Medicine Music and Bang Zoom and Play. But that's also when he put out Paper Music, you know. So I think during that whole period is when he was really exploring that side. He probably got a decent amount of respect because of the fact that it wasn't something where it was like, oh, I'm this jazz musician and now I'm just gonna try this and, you know, be kind of whatever about it. It's like he studied scores hard, you know. He put his all into it. He has a classical background, at like that's what he was like trained in as a child. So it's not the case that it was just something new. It's like, if anything, he was returning to something that had been a part of his musical lexicon for his whole life, and he was combining what he had become as a vocalist with some of his earlier training.
The composition on that recording that always killed me was the Gabriel Fauré Pavan Opus 50. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The whole record is really beautiful. That's one where it's like I've had periods of time where, like, if I've been kind of stressed out and I need to chill, or like need help falling asleep. You know, it's incredibly soothing.
I've never heard a voice blend with an oboe quite like that. Mm-hmm. Where like the voice ends, the oboe begins. It's just sort of like, what is what?
Yeah. I know that my dad really likes the oboe. I also really love the oboe. That's probably my favorite sounding wind instrument. Like, it's just like something about it. And maybe it's because it kind of sounds similar to my dad's tone. I don't know. Or maybe it's because we listened to a lot of Peter and the Wolf growing up, you know, and the oboe is such a big part of that composition. But yeah, no, his blend is potentially unmatched just in general. He has helped with arrangements of mine. When I did volume one, that was one that I kind of just kind of had to do for myself and like then get his approval. And then volume two was one where I actually like asked him like, hey, what do you think? What are your suggestions? Grasping memories between my hips, your lips grazing. By the time volume two, Finding Foundations volume two came around, I was much, not just much more confident in myself, but had a much deeper understanding of the vocal arrangements that he had done from like a musician's perspective, because you have to understand that I've listened to the majority of my dad's music from his daughter's perspective and not as a musician. And like once I made that switch, I was like, oh wow, this guy is very good. With volume two, I very much was asking him for his advice and asking like, should I leave this part in? Should I take this part out? And he would sit with me and like really listen to the recordings and like give a lot of really helpful insight. Like with Insane, for example, he was the one that suggested that I make it a single edit and an EP edit. And there were points in that song where vocals come in and out where he'd be like, this is the only time that the lead is doing this, so you should take these parts out. I think it's in the second verse when it's like when I say sing trembling. Just one touch has got me trembling. Listen, damn. At that point the background vocals come out and it's just harmonizing with that line. That was all him, and how the parts come back in at that point was also him. In the bridge, he was like, take those backgrounds out. His specific thing was, that's the only time that you sing that melody in the lead, and it should be heard, and like you have these harmonies with that, like that should be a focal point. Get you off of my brain, feeling like it's never enough, cause your love's got me going in. Insane for your love. Yeah, you got me insane for your love. Whoa, 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 you know you belong in my bed. I can't get you off of my brain, feeling like it's never enough, cause your love's got me going in. You know you belong in my bed. I can't get you off of my brain, feeling like it's never enough, cause your love's got me going in. You know. I can't get you off of my brain.
Insane by Madison McFerrin from her album Finding Foundations Volume 2, released in 2018. We'll get to your music in a second, but it's really cool to look at your dad's career because you see distinct periods. Transitioning from medicine music to circle songs, mm-hmm. you know, is like him going into this whole different phase. Your father is then blending other sort of interests, music and therapy and music and healing and music and community. Mm-hmm. Those things became more important to him.
Yeah, I think it was something where, you know, he started doing stuff with Voicestra in the early 80s. And then it just took a while for stuff to actually get recorded. And then it's something where it's like you hear the start of that on medicine music, you know, like a lot of those vocalists that are present on that record are Voicestra members, and they still to this day do stuff together. And he does a workshop at Omega up in New York almost every summer with Circle Songs as being the basis for it. He can do a lot by himself, but there are also things that he can do with other people. I think sometimes he doesn't give himself enough credit for how much healing his music has given people. And so I think that stuff like the workshops that he does really provide that kind of outlet in a way that he wouldn't necessarily have otherwise.
I mean, it's almost he was doing this before music therapy even became a thing, mm-hmm. in a weird way.
Yeah. Well, I think music's always been therapy, you know.
Let's jump into you plus you and I, mm-hmm. right? You and I, mm-hmm. just you plus I.
Yeah. Just stylistics.
The eventual merging of your brother and you. Mm-hmm. Your brother's immaculate production can be heard on everyone from with Robert Glasper to Hiatus Coyote. And so that's also kind of nice. You just have a bro hanging out
that's
just
talented. Like
makes dope ass tracks.
Yeah. It's very convenient for me.
Space. Maybe for this time and place.
So this is the fruit of the new recording.
Mm-hmm.
You are playing piano on one song,
mm-hmm.
like your father.
Not as well, but yeah. I did not go to college for film score and have not won composition awards.
Know you better.
Mm-hmm.
Unusual for your productions. Here you are, just sparsely a voice and piano.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to know about it?
I don't know. It's a bold choice. I mean, it's like, nah, it's like you're going to break from the script.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of the idea. I started doing acapella stuff because I wasn't confident enough to like have shows where I played piano and sang at the same time. And so that was kind of like me giving up that narrative.
Would you agree? You've got me tossing and turning. Could this be right? So would you advise a free young mind? Think I may find anything I'd like to know you better. Would you let me, oh, like to know you better? Would you let me, I'd like to know you better? Would you let me?
It was a song that I really liked, and I thought that it deserved to be on the record, and I thought that it kind of gave breathing room for Taylor's production, so that it wasn't like so back to back to back. I thought that like just to have kind of like a breather was, it seemed like the right thing to do. It's not a song where like I'm covered by all these other voices, and so you really just get an opportunity to just hear me. You know, as much as I try and say like, oh, I'm not a jazz singer, it's like, that is such a jazzy tune. Like, as soon as I wrote it, I was like, ah, it's a jazz tune. It's also one song that when I wrote it, I was like, I hear so much of my dad in this. That song and No Time to Lose are two songs where like when I finished writing them, I was like, oh, there's dad. I hear it. There it is. And so I really love that tune, and I really love doing it live because I do it a cappella and like get really weird with it, and it has a whole new vibe to it. And so I like being able to have both versions.
One of the headlines, I think it was in Pitchfork, that they wrote about you recently, is that Madison McFerrin is making a cappella music cool again, or something to mm-hmm. that effect. But I'll take it one step further. You're making choral music cool again, which is a whole another feat, I feel like.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
This performance live was like, I was hearing like eight part,
yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong,
really
harmony,
yeah,
a chorus of you.
Mm-hmm. That one's really fun to do live, just because it's one where I really allow myself to improvise in a way that I don't on other stuff. I am not really an improvisational person. That's Dad's thing. I'll let him do that. But then this is one where like I definitely allow myself to like get a little weird, and I like to figure out what are all the parts that I can come up with that work together and, you know, stay in pitch.
You know?
does Taylor McFerrin and, like, say, Fote, who you've collaborated with, do they fit in sort of, like, their own category of electronic music production?
Yeah, totally. I think that both of them are incredibly musical and bring a lot of different elements to what otherwise would be classified as electronic music. I mean, with Taylor in particular, like, you hear so much jazz, so much old school soul in his production, because he is, like, obsessed with Herbie Hancock and Stevie Wonder and George Duke, and, like, that's so embedded in his style. But I think that both of them really come from a place of, like, even when they get weird, it has a very musical center.
Well, thank you, Madison, for spending some time on your new project, your beautiful new recording, You and I, with you and your brother, and talking about your pops. That was
awesome. Easy to do.
Fallen, new music from Taylor McFerrin with sister, our guest on today's show, Madison McFerrin, their new EP. You can find it on Bandcamp, You and I. We thank Madison again for joining us on today's show, and we hope you enjoyed it. If you want to see Madison in our studio, we actually released a couple of videos with her a while back. You can find those as well on our website at checkoutjazz.org. And make sure to follow us at checkoutjazz. That's our Twitter handle. We also have a Facebook page. And make sure to give us a review if you do decide to subscribe to the podcast. 5 stars would be preferable. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for checking us out.